When oil prices plummet, there are winners and there are losers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in Washington, I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Midday Update. This week, West Texas crude oil has been trading at less than $50 a barrel. Right now, it's at $48.63, and that's one thing investors have been paying attention to. There's also deflation in Europe and new employment data. Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial, and she joins us now. Hey, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So the big story this week has been, and I suppose it continues to be, oil. We've seen the lowest prices in years, and it's hard not to see this in binary, right? You've got it as a good thing or a bad thing.
Exactly, and most people are looking at it as only one or the other, when the reality is there's winners and losers. And when you're a net oil consumer, as we are in the United States, it's good news for all those people saving at the pump. It's bad news, of course, if you live in an oil-producing nation such as Russia or Venezuela. Even Europe, which is a big oil consumer, not a producer, they were worried about all that oil coming in from Russia. They actually saw retail sales boosted in the month of November, despite all the bad news we saw in Europe, because it does matter when you pay less at the pump. You get to spend more.
Let's talk a bit about unemployment. We just got a report on jobless claims, and of course, a big jobs report is going to come out tomorrow for the month of December. What are you thinking that's going to look like?
We're looking for about 240,000. That's a good number for the month of December, but it's important to remember we had this huge outlier, incredible month in November, and when we have outliers like that, they tend to be revised. So if we get that 240, it will be, I think, with a downward revision to November. At the end of the day, we are generating more jobs. We're getting some more quality jobs. We're still not where we need to be to tip the scale on wages. We don't want to just be able to spend more because oil prices have fallen. We want to see wages pick up.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Diane, thanks very much.
Thank you.
A new report is out this morning from the Commonwealth Fund, and it shows health insurance premium prices are not rising as fast as they had been. Instead of annual 6 to 7% increases, it's been more like 4% since 2010. But we're not seeing any upside to that because of slow wage growth and sharp spikes in out-of-pocket costs. More of every dollar we earn goes to health care. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY, Dan Gorenstein reports.
When health costs keep climbing and income doesn't, Commonwealth Fund economist Kathy Shane says people have to think about making changes.
We've always thought if you have insurance, you're well protected, but these costs are placing stress on families.
Just how much are things changing? In 2003, no state had an average deductible of $1,000. Today, 47 do. As healthcare becomes more expensive, the nature of health insurance shifts under our feet, says NYU's Sherry Gleed.
The idea was if you need care, you should just go and get it and not worry about the cost. But we're moving back, I think, towards an era where your health insurance only covers you for the most expensive services, for the ones that are really costly.
If glorified catastrophic coverage is not the kind of product you want, Gleed says there may be an alternative. For less money up front, consumers could enjoy modest copays. The catch? Less choice when it comes to doctors, hospitals, and medications. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
President Obama has been pushing for a new trade deal called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The focus is on goods and services, but Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell wants a trade deal that he says could improve healthcare, in the U.S. at least. Hey there, Chris.
How you doing, David?
By some forecast, the U.S. is going to face a shortage of doctors, a decade, two decades out. I understand you've got a potential solution.
I do. David, let's remember that we live in a global economy, and free trade is a classic way to bring supply and demand into better balance. So when it comes to thinking about doctor shortages, let's open up our borders to doctors from Germany, Switzerland, France, Brazil, Uruguay, South Korea, and elsewhere in the world. And David, what that will do is end the supply worry.
I remember when I was living in New York, hearing these stories about the foreign-born, foreign-trained doctor who was working as a cab driver or a doorman.
That's right. And look, and there's some fears, and it always comes up, well, what about, you know, are these doctors competent? Are they going to be any good? And the fact is, most are trained to U.S. standards anyway, and I think the fear is really exaggerated. And the doctors can take a standardized test. And if they pass, we want them to come over here and work as a doctor dealing with Medicaid patients, dealing with Medicare patients. It's also really good for consumers. Dean Baker, he's an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He estimates that our doctor protectionism, it costs the consumer about an extra $80 billion in payments a year compared to other wealthy countries. If we open up our borders and we say to doctors from around the world, come here and do your work, the consumer is really going to benefit, and it will wring out some of these costs that we all worry about in our medical care system.
Trade is something that's certainly on the Obama administration's agenda. They've been trying to hammer out this new trade deal. I wonder if you've heard. Is anyone picking up on your idea?
Okay, this idea has not gotten a lot of credence. And I think this should be at the top of the list. We seem to love free trade when it comes to the blue-collar professions. But we don't really like free trade when it comes to the white-collar professions. Look, this should be at the top of the list. But frankly, I don't even think it's on the list.
Marketplace's economics guy, Chris Farrell. Chris, thanks very much as always.
Thanks a lot, David.
Finally, the marijuana industry has its first institutional investor. Billionaire Peter Thiel's Founders Fund is investing in the company that owns Leafly.com, a website The Guardian says is like Yelp for pot. One of Thiel's business partners has spent a year and a half doing due diligence, and he hopes Leafly's parent company will become the world's first cannabis conglomerate. I'm David Gura with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.